Hi, class. Today I'm joined by one of our awesome superstar elementary special educators, Colleen Dunn O'Brien, and she's going to introduce herself and tell us a little bit about her role and her background and what is happening in elementary. So, Colleen, hello, welcome.
Hello, Dr. Hughes. Hello, students. So my background is that I, right out of high school, I went to Rhode Island College, and in 1997, I graduated with my bachelor's in elementary education, and I had a minor in special education. And when I first graduated, I was unable to find a job in that field. Lo and behold, the Grodin Center was hiring, so I took a chance. Working at the Grodin Center, I had never worked with that population of, you know, severely challenged students. But like I said, I took a chance, and I loved it. So while I was there, in order to stay employed there, I had to take coursework. So I started my coursework, and I really love that population so much, and I love the challenge of it. I just decided to get my master's in severe and profound special education. So I worked, you know, during the day, and at night, over the course of 4 years, I would go to class, and I eventually got my master's in severe and profound education. From the Grodin Center, I then worked for the Northern Rhode Island Collaborative as a classroom teacher for severe and profound students. I was there for a very long time, and they worked in conjunction with the public schools, so we were semi-private. I was always housed in a public elementary school, so I was considered a collaborative classroom. So I would have my more challenged learners in that classroom, but we would have some inclusion during the course of the day with the general ed population, which at times was tough because we weren't really part of that school. So we had to spend some time kind of networking and
sure.
Easing our way in. And then on a whim, I saw that East Greenwich was hiring. So I applied, and lo and behold, I was lucky enough to get a job there. Again, I was employed as the severe and profound classroom teacher. And I did that for probably about 9 years at Frenchtown Elementary School, and then decided that maybe I would like to try something a little bit different. So I put in for a position as a resource teacher at the kindergarten level at Frenchtown, and I ended up getting that position. And I just love it. I use a lot of what I always use throughout the years,
yes.
With even the challenging learners, with those little resource kiddos. So I love it.
And we love having you, believe me. And and I'm giggling as it to myself as you're talking, because you know, I am so thankful that you're still at the school, you know, at Frenchtown. But I remember a little guy in kindergarten this past year who, as I pulled up to the school and parked my car, I was walking across the parking lot, and he was hiding behind one of the bushes in the front of the building, and you were involved in that day.
Oh, yes.
And I'm sure you're going to mention some of the strategies that you used.
Oh, yes.
Because that was one of those challenging days with a situation that really needed to be assisted immediately, since the student was in danger. You know, I mean, he was in a safe spot, but you know, to kind of come upon a student behind the bush and the principal and thinking, oh boy, what's going to happen here?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, when you think about your wide range of experience, I mean, from our most vulnerable, severely challenged students, and thinking about your experience now and using all those things, you know, you touched upon that in terms of strategy. You say that you're using a lot of what you've always used, and so let's talk a little bit about students in general that you have had the experience with, and what are some of the most challenging behaviors that you have seen, you know, in terms of your experience. And so I guess hiding behind the bush when you're in kindergarten and trying to escape, you know, that part, that's challenging. But is that, you know, the most challenging, right? I mean,
no, I would say anything in the category of aggression is challenging. I mean, that includes like throwing, spitting. Those to me are always the most challenging behaviors to manage because you have to do multiple things at one time. Like you have to maintain the safety of that child, the staff, but you also have a classroom of children that you have to maintain the safety of. And it's all a matter of, you know, split moment decisions that are just made fractions of seconds at a time. You know, is it the best to try to manage this behavior in the classroom? Do we remove the child? So I think those are the most challenging. And I always found that, especially when I was doing this at a younger age with less experience, I would almost have like a little bit of a fire in my belly, like a little bit of a fight or flight. And I would have to remind myself to stop and take a deep breath and just really think about it. What is the child trying to say with the behavior?
Right. That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, right, and thinking about that, and I love how you kind of reflected on when you were first at this and, you know, you're working with students and your first reaction to things and then taking that step back and looking, you know, what are some other ways that you've worked with students in terms of planning and programming? You know, certainly your own self-awareness is something that was, it sounds like, very important. But what are some tips and things that you would suggest in approaching an issue and approaching a challenging behavior? What are some of the things that you've done with some of the students that you've worked with in the classroom?
So I would say you always want to go with the approach of less is more. You don't want to start approaching the child with a lot of verbal dialogue. You know, you are looking to diffuse the situation. You're not trying to pour gasoline on it. And a lot of times what happens is people who approach are kind of going in with a lot of adrenaline. And I think the first thing they do is they want to talk the child down, when in actuality, my experience has been that the less talking you do, the better for everyone. Sometimes things can really just calm down almost instantly with that decreased volume.
Mm-hmm. And so let's go back to one of the other examples that you gave in terms of the most challenging behaviors in your experience in elementary school with the aggressive behavior. You know, how would you approach a child? And you can kind of think of an example of an aggressive behavior. How have you approached a child? What kinds of planning adaptations or accommodations have you made? Like what have you done with a specific aggression?
So if there was a certain behavior that was aggressive and it was routine and it was became typical and, you know, part of the child's repertoire, what we would first try to do is you always try to collect data on it and try to figure out what's the function of the behavior, when is it most likely to occur. So you basically generate a behavior plan for it so that in the moment when that behavior occurs, everyone is somewhat on board with how to manage the behavior. So if it was a kiddo that maybe the aggression was picking up an object and throwing it, if you can read the child beforehand and see the precursors, you obviously want to remove everything from within that child's reach. So really, with any type of aggression, you have to be able to read the child and see, all right, he's starting to uptick or she's starting to uptick. And then you kind of want to manipulate the environment so that there's a lot of space, but not a lot of things around so that the kid can't grab and throw.
Right.
And then you yourself want to use personal distance with that child because you don't want to be in their strike zone.
Right. And so that those strategies are so essential, right? And so, and when you think about your work, and certainly I've observed you in the classroom and have been amazed at some of the things, and, you know, your training with your paraprofessionals and those kinds of kinds of things and your communication to other teachers. Talk a little bit about that. So talk a little bit about some of the things that if you're an elementary special educator and you're working with and through behaviors and working with students, what are some of the things that you need your paraprofessionals to know, you need your building principal to know, you need other educators to know, and perhaps parents, you know, kind of thinking yes. about that communication piece.
Yes. So I would say that every child should have some sort of plan. That identifies what that interfering or challenging behavior is. So everyone needs to know what the behavior looks like. It should be observable so that, you know, whether I'm in the room or not, the other people there would recognize when that behavior occurs. And then you want to have a plan, like how are we going to approach it so that everyone is approaching it in the same way.
Right. So the consistency, right? Is that what you're saying? The consistency is really important. And so I'm sure that over the course of your time, you know, that consistency sometimes is it is tough. And thinking about how quickly you mentioned you have to move sometimes in making those decisions, you know, have you been in a situation in which, you know, you've communicated this information, you thought everyone was on board, and then things have gone a little bit off track? What have you done to try to help that kind of a situation or prevent that?
Right. So you do, you try to prevent it. And sometimes it might just be communicating non-verbally with a look like, come on, what are you doing? What are you thinking?
And you're talking about to the adults. Yes. Yes.
But if you can't do that in the moment, then after the behavior, you always want to have dialogue with those that are involved and say, you know, I'm not sure, what were you trying to do when you did this? Or tell me about what your goal was with this. And then if it made sense to me, I'd be like, oh, all right, well, maybe that's a strategy we want to put into the behavior plan. If not, then I would probably gently say, but we need to stick to the behavior plan to see, does this plan really work? You know, you don't want to have any variables early on with a kiddo's behavior plan.
Right. And so in saying that, Colleen, how long do you think in the elementary level? I know every kid is completely different, but in general, as an elementary special educator, you've gotten, you know, you've kind of gone through the FBA process or the data collection and you feel pretty good. You have a hypothesis about the function of the behavior and you've got this behavior intervention plan somewhat informed and you're ready to try it out. How long do you try it out before you switch gears?
Typically, I think the rule of thumb is 2 weeks before you saw any sort of change, because what typically will happen is anytime you change how you respond to behavior, you're going to see a spike and then it should calm down. So I would say if you don't see any signs of progress, any signs of reducing the behavior, I wouldn't let it go longer than a month. Mm-hmm. I think a month is a good amount of time to really be able to gauge it's making a little bit of a dent, we want to keep going with it, or it's not making a strong enough dent, we need to retweak it. It depends really on the behavior and the intensity of the behavior.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't go longer than a month.
Okay. And so if you're in that situation as a special educator and, you know, you've done the part about communicating, you're having kind of conversations together as the team, you're debriefing after some of the incidents that are occurring and you're, you know, taking stock of what has happened, what the goal is, let's talk about what happens then. You know, so you're 4 weeks in, you feel like you can say that, wow, we've done this with fidelity, we've seen a little dent, and now, you know, we're at this point where we need to do something, maybe shift interventions. And so how would you approach that as a special educator?
I would just gather everyone around and say, somehow we've missed something. Mm-hmm. Maybe we misidentified what the function of the behavior is or what we perceive the function of the behavior to be. And we have to like regroup. We have to come back and take more data and maybe look at it through a different lens. But I would say that something must have been missed.
Interesting.
What the function of the behavior is or the way the intervention was designed.
Yeah. And so how do you have parents in on that conversation? you know, as a special educator in thinking about that, you know, a very, say, aggressive behavior, and you're seeing that and you're working on that with a particular student, how do you engage the family in that conversation as well?
So that family would have been involved from the start with the FBA. And then when we devised what the plan was as far as intervening with the child, a copy of that would have gone home to the family. And I would usually say to the family, do you want daily feedback on the behavior, or do you want weekly feedback? Again, usually a family would want it depending on the intensity of the behavior. Some parents wanted to know every day, how was my child? And some were like, you know, it's okay if I get a weekly update.
Okay.
And that's how I would keep them involved. And I would ask, like, you know, what do you see at home? Are there any changes at home in the home setting? Or do you notice anything different about your child?
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that those conversations may have, you know, really kind of helped you with some of the problems in school, saying, oh, well, that must be why this is occurring. Yeah. You know, I mean, it kind of puts the puzzle pieces together a little bit for us,
right.
You know, and the other part I wanted to ask you about is the type of environment that you provide, you know, and I know that you're in a different classroom in your current role, and the times that I've gone in, it's spacious. You know, it's a nice, nice space.
Yeah.
What do you keep in mind? And your other classroom was as well. It was cozy and nice, and it was just very welcoming. What are some of the things that you do when you're setting up your classroom to encourage that positive behavior interventions that are occurring just on a regular basis? What are some of the things that you do to set that up?
Well, I always want the room to look like a classroom, and a classroom for young learners, regardless of who's in that classroom, if it's just a resource student or if it's a more intensive student. I think every child deserves to have their own space and deserves to have their own safe space where, okay, if you need time to, you know, kind of tantrum, here's the place you can do it. Nobody's going to look at you, and just go for it. Get it all out. But that would just be one part of the classroom. It's not, it shouldn't be that when the child walks in that room, that then becomes the trigger.
Right. Right.
So I want my room to always look like just any other kindergarten classroom. There's an area for work. There's an area for play or for reading, an area for sensory opportunities or movement opportunities. But then there is some, you know, chill down room too.
Right. And some time for that. And other things I've noticed in your classroom are activities that help students get back on track, right?
Yes.
Kind of those compliance activities and kind of like thinking back, like to get them back to the structure of learning and complying. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about some awesome things that I know that you do. You know, one of them being, do you need another minute? I love that.
Yeah.
And do you want to talk a little bit about that and some of the visuals that you've used in your classroom and setting that up for students and in general?
Sure. Yeah, sure. So I always traipse around the building with my little timer, my
bag,
my classroom key. So everyone can always hear me coming because I always make a lot of noise. But I always, always, always travel with my timer. And attached to that little lanyard that hooks usually on my belt loop are visuals. And it just, usually it's sit down. Usually there's an icon for safe hands. Usually there's one for wait a minute or quiet voice. And the point of that is sometimes if I'm in a classroom and maybe I see a child who might be getting a little bit borderline, I can just kind of casually go over and maybe show that little visual. Maybe it's the quiet. Maybe it's the sit down. And I try to do that in a very respectful way so that it's not, you know, me hovering over the child and giving a direction. but sometimes I might catch something that the other teachers in the room might not catch because they're trying to deliver the lesson.
Yeah.
So those are some of those visuals, and that's to kind of really support that nonverbal communication, less is more.
Great.
And so in that environment, if the child looked like maybe they were a little antsy and maybe a movement break or just a change of scenery might benefit them, I would say, how about we go take a walk? And then maybe we would go into my room and I'd say, you know what? You look like you need a couple of minutes. I would set my timer. And, you know, typically there are boundaries within that. It's not free reign. It's not, oh, we can take the Barbies out. It's like a break. What kind of movement do you want? Do you want to have a few minutes on the scooter board? Do you want to do the jumping mats? But it's very specific. It's very task oriented. And there's a time constraint with it. So it's not very open-ended. I think that's very important to make things as black and white and mm-hmm. as concrete as you can. So, you know, the timer goes off and I always say, oh, that was your timer. What do you think? Do you want one more minute or are you ready? A lot of times in the beginning, that's such a novel thing for the kids. They almost always will say, I want one more minute. But it's interesting to see as the year goes on, a lot of times they'll say, no, Mrs. O, I'm ready. And yeah. they'll go back to class and they're okay. And you know, some kids just need more.
Yeah. And I've seen that in action when you do that. And even going back to that little boy, behind the bush in kindergarten and yeah. in the front, and you had the timer. I couldn't believe it. You know, we had gotten the kid into the school and here you are, yeah. you show up, you've got your timer and the, you know, the whole thing on the lanyard. So you really do yeah. do that. And it's awesome because, you know, really that's setting that boundary almost, and then also giving the task, you know, I know you're ready when, and very right. little communication to the student, which is so critical right. when you have more than one person they're working, right. but I love the, you know, do you need another minute? Because it's just so respectful of the student. And yeah. it also, I think, teaches them that when I'm doing something in a positive way and I'm able to do that, then I can still do a little bit more if I'm not quite ready. And you're being right. so respectful of the student. I just love it.
Such and it gives them an element of control.
Yeah. So. Yeah, which is huge, right? Especially, yeah. That's a great one. And so there are just so many things that I have seen you do and you've touched upon them today and thinking about the visuals and thinking about, you know, the respectful manner in which you approach students, thinking about how you're working with general educators, just what are some things that, you know, are really important for a special educator to know about when you're working with, you know, challenging students behaviorally, maybe with some social emotional needs, and you're the special educator working with the general education, you know, group, and you're working in the kindergarten area. What are some things that you could say are really helpful for your work?
I think the most helpful thing I would say is that as a special educator, you can't assume that the gen ed teachers have the same education and training in behaviors as maybe we have had. A lot of them maybe have had one course in behavior modification and that's it. And typically they have that course very early on in their education. So by the time they start teaching, it's not probably at the forefront of their thinking, where behavior management and the structures within a classroom are everything.
Right.
They're everything. If you don't have those behaviors squashed at the beginning,
that's
nothing
it.
Else is going to get in, right?
Yeah.
And structure. Like, every classroom really does need to be very structured. You can eliminate a lot of behavior problems just with structure, predictability, and a lot of routines.
Absolutely.
I think there are some people that have those natural tendencies and that's very easy for them. And then others who they themselves don't need to operate like that. So they might not know how to do it.
Right.
But I've always had good luck working with people that maybe in the beginning might not be that receptive to it. And if you just chip away a little at a time and really make yourself a resource to help them, like you're yeah. not asking them to do the work. You know, you're always saying, well, I can help you. Let's try it like this.
That's a great one.
So that they don't feel like you're telling them what to do.
Right. That's a great suggestion. And again, so helpful to all teachers and anyone yeah. working as a team, co-teaching, or if you're in a resource role and you're working in and out of the classroom.
Yeah.
And just thinking about this and touching upon you know, kind of your career and maybe just a couple of things that you have felt really good about in special education when you're dealing with, you know, challenging behaviors. What's something that you can say, wow, you know, I'm really glad I did this? What is it that you are happy you did in thinking back on some successful, and you have had many, many successes, successful cases?
I have to say, I thought about this for a couple of days. Like, is there any one case that I feel better about or more successful at? And really, no. I have to say that I feel the most successful in every year getting a novel group of kids, getting them together, and getting them from point A to point whatever. Because everyone moves at their own rate.
So, exactly.
And I think just always keeping in mind that you have to work as a team, and mm-hmm. always remembering that, all right, so maybe I've done it for 20 years, but I don't know everything. And you always have to keep yourself open to that.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, that's really the advice that I think is so, you know, overarching of so many of the things that we do and plan. And so I love the idea of the fact that, you know, it is about getting students from point A to B, and it's not linear. You know, we're you know, many, many paths to get there. And it's the joy in that journey a lot of times that even if it's challenging and it's hard work, the end result is really great. So I appreciate that, Colleen. And just to end, I was just curious what you would say, you know, what do you wish every special educator knew? Like a handful of things that you wish that, you know, every special educator understood or knew about challenging behaviors.
I would say that you have to have an understanding that the behavior, what you're seeing, is just a representation of a need. It's a need that the child has, be that communication or sensory based. No child wants to misbehave, so it's meaning, and it's our job, and it's not always an easy job, to figure out what does that behavior mean? What is that child communicating to us in that moment? I mean, especially with the young kiddos in kindergarten, you know, they don't know. They don't have the language mm-hmm. for it.
Exactly.
So you just always have to be mindful of that. And I think once you really understand that and adopt that and truly believe it, it makes everything so much easier. It's not just, oh, that kid with his behavior. It's, well, what can I do to try to figure it out and help him or her?
Yeah. That's awesome advice. That's a critical lens to look at all of this through. And I so appreciate your time today. And your views and your experience. It's really helped, you know, kind of focus me on thinking about, you know, the little ones and elementary level and the kinds of things that we do to set up students for success behaviorally and emotionally. Yeah. So thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you. We need good teachers.
So. Yes, we do. That's what we're trying at Roger Williams. Excellent. Thanks, Colleen.